Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Crocher. Farm traditions. When it comes to watering cattle, ranchers have traditionally let their cows wander down to the stream to get a good drink. But that practice has come into disfavor. As we look at the resulting problems with environmental damage and health concerns over E. coli and cryptosporidium from manure runoff. Rangeland scientist Dr. Walter Wilms has found even cows have something to moo about when it comes to water quality. And next time you drive by some wagon wheels and rusting tractors in a farmer's yard, think of Diana Smith. This Australian archaeologist is writing her PhD thesis on the importance of what she calls farm graveyards. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. WISE is the Water Institute for Semi-Arid Ecosystems at the University of Lethbridge. One of the objectives of WISE is to draw upon the knowledge of a broad range of scientific disciplines to improve our management of water and its quality in southern Alberta. Cattle have a major impact on water resources. From a human health perspective, we want to keep pathogens like E. coli, Giardia, and Cryptosporidium out of our water supplies. That means preventing the deposition of livestock manure in water sources like streams or even dugouts. Well, as much as we don't like cattle manure in the water, it seems that cows don't like it either. Dr. Walter Wilms is a scientist specializing in range ecology at the Agriculture Canada Research Station in Lethbridge.
Well, what we're looking at is trying to keep cattle out of the water. We also have evidence to show that it also has a negative impact on livestock production. And livestock production, from the point of view of cattle, making water unpalatable for themselves, and they do this by defecating, or the feces that they deposit has a negative palatability factor for cattle. And when cattle go to drink the next time, they also try to avoid whatever the smells are that are present.
So they don't even like drinking out of water they've pooped in before?
No, they don't. They will do their best to avoid it. And we found that one part of fresh manure in 20,000 parts of water are detectable by the cows, and that they will then do their best to avoid it or look for alternative sources of water. What we've been able to show is that cows drinking less water, and they will drink less water if the water quality isn't very good, will also eat less. And the net result is that they will also gain less, and this has a direct impact on the rancher's bottom line, the dollars that he earns from those cows.
You're looking at dugouts, and you have colleagues who are looking at other things like streams and different things. What are some of the things that you're finding with your research?
Okay, well, what we're finding is that if we were to provide cattle with clean water, for example, water from a totally different source, that cattle may gain up to 23%, or on average, they've gained 23% more than animals that have had direct access to the dugout. Now, this is water from a dugout that has not been cleaned. We feel that if we were to keep cattle out of the dugout, that that water would then improve in quality. The cattle would stop to defecate into the water, and therefore over time we would expect those nutrients and whatever the organic compounds are that cattle are reacting to would dissipate, and that water would become better in quality. So we feel that by keeping cattle out of the dugouts, we can improve the water quality of that water supply. And we do this by, the only way that's really possible is by pumping the water into an off-site storage facility, for example, a trough, and then allowing cattle to drink from the trough. Now, when we're dealing with off-site storage, we have to also deal with the premise that we cannot fence the dugout or the stream. And the reason for that is that the system of delivery to the trough may fail. And ranchers are not always capable of of checking their animals on a daily basis to ensure that they have water. So in this, in the event that of a failure, the cattle should still have access to the dugout or the stream. And so at this point, we're dealing with a question of behavior, of animal behavior.
Well, I would think if you can't put a fence around it, then how do you sort of get them to go from one place to another, like to stay away from the dugout and go to the trough? It's not like someone's out there herding them around.
No, that's true. Now, we have evidence from Kamloops area that cattle drinking from a stream versus a trough will choose the stream about 20% of the time and the trough about 80% of the time. Now, we haven't tested this for dugouts. We think that it may be very similar to that. Cattle will tend to prefer drinking from a trough. Now, the question is, how much are they going to drink from the trough? And some of the issues that will affect that is the quality of water that we offer them. And at this point, we test the notion that water in the dugout is not the same in all parts of the dugout. And so what we're doing now is looking at the palatability of water from different sources within the dugout. We're testing water from the surface in the center of the dugout, from below the surface of the dugout, and from the edge of the dugout. And what we're finding is that the cattle will actually prefer water that is pumped from the surface away from the edge. And we think that this is quite likely related to the amount of organics that are present at that particular source. It's the furthest away from the edge, furthest away from the bottom where the anaerobic decomposition may occur. And also, it's where the greatest amount of aeration occurs. The surface of the dugout is also disturbed by wind, and some natural aeration likely occurs there.
Now, you mentioned that your research so far shows that cattle do like to go down to the river once in a while in order to get a drink of water. Why is that?
I think we underestimate the personality of cows, and I've come to think of them as humans. We have our own preferences. We have developed a pattern of through learning or experiences, teaching, and which has defined our preferences for the choices and the choices that we make. And for example, my associate at Kamloops had one cow that consistently preferred to drink from the dugout, from the stream. Now, this cow was completely an aberration of the herd, because all the other animals preferred drinking from the trough, but this one animal persistently drank from the stream. We can only guess on what was driving this cow to the stream. We really don't know. And yet it does raise the possibility that perhaps we can teach the animals to like one supply of water over the other, or we may be able to help the animals make their choices. For example, the question becomes, how much effort would they go to drinking from the trough or from the stream? For example, if we were to put a small fence to divert them at the stream, would that be enough to thwart the animal from going into the stream to drink? Would that be enough of a disincentive to encourage the animal to drink from the trough? Or if we were to improve the water quality in the trough, would that encourage the animals then to drink from the trough? And that's why we're working at this, or why we're looking at the different water qualities within a dugout in order to identify the best water in order to be able to offer the cows, when we're pumping water, the best quality of water. Because really the choices that they make are very likely related to how well they like one supply of water versus the other. And by providing them with the best water supply and perhaps providing some disincentive for the cows to go drink directly from the water source, the draw for the dugout, or the dugout or the stream, that we can then improve the selection of the trough and keep cattle away from the stream or the dugout.
Why is the Water Institute for Semi-Arid Regions that the University of Lethbridge has initiated? They're quite interested in the work that you're doing. How do you think all of this will fit together as we look at water and water quality in southern Alberta?
Well, cows, matter of fact, most of the issues of water quality in southern Alberta are related to livestock. We are providing some incentive for ranches to ensure better water quality. And this is really how WISE, this is really fits in with the mandate of WISE.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
That was Dr. Walter Wilms. He's a rangeland ecologist with the Agriculture Canada Research Station in Lethbridge. Drive along any highway in Alberta, and sooner or later you'll pass by an old tractor or thresher sitting in a farmer's field. You might wonder why anyone would even keep this old equipment that's rusting and falling apart. This is a question that grabbed hold of archaeologist Diana Smith. She's working on a PhD from the Department of Archaeology at Flinders University in South Australia. I met Diana in Lethbridge while she was here doing her field research comparing farm graveyards in Australia and Alberta.
Old farm equipment, I find the whole idea of the way that farmers accumulate obsolete and broken down vehicles and machinery over a long period of time, in fact generations of time, and place them in a particular spot on their farm property, usually between anything from 50 metres to 400-500 metres from the farmhouse that they live in. And they put it in what's called, at home in Australia, a graveyard, or just the old farm dump, or the boneyard, and there's a few other similar terms like that. And before I began my thesis, I was driving around doing field work for Aboriginal Affairs in South Australia, and I would keep seeing these places and thought to myself, well, I don't recall reading anything about these sites, and there must be something that tells us a bit about agricultural heritage. The more I thought about it and the more I began to speak to a few people, I realised that there was a significant meaning and purpose to these sites. They weren't just a dump to just put your trash from the farm on. They were a place that you could use as an entire resource, and a place that you could use for a whole range of secondary purposes, so that once the machine or the vehicle, the truck, the tractor, the harvester, whatever dies, then if it's not left out in the paddock where it broke down, then it's often brought back to this particular place in the graveyard, and that's where your old friends go to die, to be laid to rest, so to speak.
You've been travelling around Australia looking at these graveyards, but you're also here in Alberta. I'm speaking to you in Lethbridge. Mm-hmm. What have you been looking at here?
I've been doing a comparative study of these sites, Cheryl, so that I could gain an understanding of how people in other countries built these sites, how they relate to them, to sort of see if there were similarities or contrasts to the way that farmers use them and regard them in Australia.
Whereabouts have you gone here?
In this Lethbridge region, we've gone out to Picture Butte, to a couple of farms there, and three farms in the Coaldale and south of Coaldale area.
When you go and you speak to these farmers and you ask them about their junk, depending on your perspective, What did they say? What is the significance of this to them?
At first, they're amazed that anybody wants to go and have a look at their old things. And their acceptance of my study has been really good. And often they've expressed to me how it's given them a new way of regarding their sites. It's made them realise that it's not just them, that they've had to kind of keep their passion for old vehicles and machinery sort of under wraps, so to speak. It's for many of them, it's been an obsession where they keep collecting material because they really enjoy doing that, but they've had to do it in such a way that I guess they're not seen as being too out of the ordinary.
You're looking at this through the eyes of a scientist. What's the science behind this? What are some of the things that you're measuring or looking for?
Well, in archaeology, we take in historical archaeology and modern material culture, we look at the way that physical material has had an impact on the landscape and what role it plays in our society, how people regard material items and invest them with meaning, and the way that they've used them and the purpose that they give them overall, so that not only can you draw on evidence from the physical site, but you can also complement it with historical documentation. So the written record complements the physical material record.
Well, it's interesting that you say usually these things are within a certain number of meters of the house and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Can you give me some examples of other things that you've documented?
Sure. Well, that's one of the big things in archaeology is the patterning of sites. So when I go there, I record how the site is laid out, where things are in relation to each other. So I photograph it and map it and record it. And I look at evidence of inventiveness and modification. I also look at evidence for how the site might have been used as a whole rather than just individual items in it. And some of the more interesting ones that I've found in Australia have been sites that are used as flood banks or erosion banks. So they've been all pushed into one area and they helped us fill up a gap in the landscape, I guess. And there are also some comparative sites here where some farmers tend to just perch them on the edge of a coulee and just push them over and bury them, and that happens in Australia as well, so it then becomes a truly archaeological site. Some of the other interesting things I've found here have been the way that people put old machinery to secondary uses that are more unique. I don't see it happening in Australia.
Why do you think that is?
Well, one reason came to light here when I gave the seminar last week, and that's with the use of machinery to prop up advertising signs, often, like, for example, from between Lethbridge to Calgary on the highway, you can see old threshing machines, old harvesters or some vehicles, and they have somebody's big sign propped up on there, or it's painted on the vehicle itself. And somebody told me last week that that's a means of getting around a bylaw that says that you can't put permanent signs on the highway, but they can put them on something that is mobile, so that if they do this, then they can, if needs be, shift it. And apparently they're supposed to shift them every 3 months or something, but it's not enforced in any way. So I found that a really interesting way of using it.
When you go to farms and you're looking at the graveyard, mm-hmm. is there something about these that's typical? Can you go in and go, mm-hmm, yep, there it is, right over there where it should be, that sort of thing?
Yeah, on a whole, I'm always amazed that when you look at the places from the road, you think, oh, yeah, it looks really haphazard. And then you go there and you see, oh, yeah, the farmer uses this place for a specific purpose. It's laid out in rows. Typically you see the back of what we call them at home utilities, or here you call them pickups. You see the back sections used for storage of wire bales and timber and other items. I think most sites have a mower in them, an old horse-drawn mower. And one of the more typical, but I think will become rarer in the near future, is the single furrow plough. You can usually find one of those or parts of one of those lying around. Here there are quite a few different types of cultivators and things, but each farm has had sets of those in them, springtime cultivators and harrows that are similar.
When you look at the whole range of scientific activity, mm-hmm. we're so concerned these days about advancing in nanotechnology mm. or sending someone off to Mars and finding a cure for cancer. Mm-hmm. Where does what you do fit into the scheme of things? Like, why should we even be concerned about this?
That's a good question. And for me, it's patently obvious that these sites are not going to last forever. The majority of the material in them is rusting. The timbers are rotting. So it's something that, in terms of the archaeological past, is going to be a fleeting moment in our millennia of years, so to speak. This is the archaeology of the time period that spans from, I guess, the Industrial Revolution until today, to the present and probably the future. But it's something that has developed at such a pace, and with that has been, you know, the mass production of material, the built-in obsolescence of a lot of machinery and equipment, so that things are built to fail because manufacturers want to keep putting them out, changing the technology every so many years, reinforcing the incentive to change over by making bigger and better machinery, so that this stuff becomes superseded very quickly. Because the face of the farm is changing so rapidly, the small farming family unit is being swallowed up by the larger corporate concerns, so that the face of farming will change and is changing. So the farm graveyard and its particular place in the lives of farming families will likely not be preserved nearly as well as other things that we value highly. We usually look at the material past and pick out the very excellent buildings, the monuments that stand out in the landscape, things that we regard as precious on that level. So it's a more aesthetic value. With the farm graveyard, it's something that we use every day in life. Particularly farmers use it to stroll around and recall past memories. So it's a place where it's a repository of memories. And that's very highly regarded by them personally, so it's precious to them. So if these sites are disappearing, then we're not getting any record of them, and I believe it's highly important, and that was the point I wanted to make, that at least these sites be recorded before they disappear, so that perhaps photographs be taken and some record of what was there, who used them, and what it meant to them, and at least some of the stories that went with that as well. And that's part of what I've been doing, but also by talking to the farmers about it, it gives them a renewed sense of where they've come from and where their lives fit into the overall scheme of it. So it becomes a whole statement about their agricultural heritage.
When you're finished, how will this be used?
Well, the PhD thesis, to begin with, it will form a resource within the university and people who want access to it, but I do hope to publish the thesis, and I'm fortunate that a lot of the chapters that I've been writing have all got themes that can easily be put into a publication separately as well, and plenty of photographic material that would be able to help illustrate the issues that I've been dealing with. It's an area that has been overlooked, and attending a conference in Washington before I came here, I was really pleased to see that there has been a growing interest in my work. So I'm just hoping that I can encourage other people to value the recent agricultural past as I have been trying to do in my study.
What are the themes that you're looking at with this?
One of the major themes that's come out of it and has been quite a surprise to me since I started was the high propensity of the sites for memory as places, as I mentioned, of repositories of memories. So I've ended up devoting a whole chapter to that, and the paper I gave at Washington was called The Memory Machines. So there's a lot of nice stories that go with the way that farmers are able to negotiate the past through the farm graveyard. Hmm. Some of the other themes that I've looked at are the way that farmers can use pieces of old machinery and equipment to enhance the look of their entrances to their property. And you might even have noticed that in the suburbs as well, like an old wagon sitting in somebody's front yard, there are fences made of wagon wheels with horseshoes in between, and lots of lovely ways that people tend to use farm equipment to embellish their properties. But for farmers, it has a deeper sense of meaning. It's more a symbol of, I've been here for many years on this land, my family were here for a long time. It's a kind of a statement of colonisation of the landscape, of a farming family heritage.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cheryl.
That was Diana Smith, an archaeologist from Adelaide in South Australia. She was in Alberta researching farm graveyards for her PhD thesis. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the University of Lethbridge, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, Alberta Ingenuity, the Capital Region Innovation Centre, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the National Institute for Nanotechnology, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Research Council, Alberta Conservation Association, and the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.